Blog Talk Radio.
Listening to Occult Empire on the Antimatter Zone Network. Welcome back again, my friends, to this episode of Occult Empire on Antimatter Broadcasting, which is, of course, in coordination with Antimatter Zone Network. And I'm your host again tonight, Bob from Cincinnati, and what a pleasure it is to be back here on Occult Empire. This is Occult Empire episode 12, and what a great resonating number that is, because tonight we have back that faithful steward of alchemy, our friend Mark Passio of whatonearthishappening.com. And I'm not going to go into the bio of Mark Passio because the people who listen to this show are well acquainted with Mark Passio and his work. But for those who are not, you can always go to whatonearthishappening.com, and that's the website of Mark Passio, and you'll be able to find all of his material there. Mark always suggests go to the podcast number one on his podcast page and start from there. I believe that was the spring of 2010 Mark started, and move forward in his podcasts. And like Passio says, it is a tapestry. It builds one episode upon the other. So don't start at number 45 and move forward. I think there's about 153 episodes now. It's amazing. This guy is prodigious. I mean, he just keeps putting out work. And I'll be honest, the people who interface with Mark, and I in my small way, the few times I get to interface with Passio professionally, we are blown away by the amount of the content on this guy's website. It grows and it never ends. And there's such depth of wisdom. Not just knowledge. I mean, anybody can put up a website with knowledge. I mean, you know, even a slow person like me can put up a website, which ironically enough, I do have a website now. So if anybody wants to check it out, my website is occultempire.com. And it's just a skeleton site right now, but please take a moment to check it out. I'm sure by the time you hear this, there'll be a lot more content, and I'm putting up more content as we speak, and I'm going to write my first article. So I hope you like it, and let me know what you think about the articles that I place on occultempire.com. I'm not going to burn up too much time chit-chatting because, like I said, the people who listen to this show, Occult Empire, you are advanced students of the occult and of the work of Mark Passio. So I'm not going to beat that. We're not going to ask Mark about his history in the dark occult. That's been covered ad nauseum. No offense, Passio, but you would think that the people that interview you, they haven't caught your bio at some stage, but they, obviously haven't. But, we know all about the bio. What we want to know, Mark, is about how spiritually we can advance because we know that you hold some of the keys of knowledge. Your knowledge is mammoth, and we're thankful that you're sharing your occulted information with us, especially here at Occult Empire. I want to make people aware that Mark will be speaking in St. Louis, Missouri, on Saturday, May 31st, 2014, at the Arden Mead Center. and that's located at 17 Selma Avenue, St. Louis, Missouri, 63119. He will be presenting a one-time only all-day seminar, and this seminar is called Streetwise Spirituality, What Does It Truly Mean to Be Awake? And, wow, I wish I could be there. I was at the last one in Asheville, North Carolina, and I burned up all my resources. I don't think Mrs. Bob from Cincinnati is going to let me pay for travel and lodging again to go see Passio. It hurts my heart somewhere that I'm not able to go. But I burned up all my resources. And, yes, my wife came out with me, and she met Mark, and she was happy to friend Mark on Facebook. So I myself don't have a Facebook page, but my wife does, and she's definitely one of Passio's friends now. But I apologize. I kind of digressed, and thanks for entertaining me, friends. But the doors open on Saturday, May 31st, 2014, in St. Louis for Mark's one-day speaking engagement. If you're going to be there, you got to be there early. Doors open at 9 a.m. Morning session starts at 9:30, lunch break at 12:30, afternoon session at 2. You get an hour and a half for lunch, question and answer session at 5. Advance tickets are $20 donation. You may call 314-488-4454 or email Ray Mumm, that's R-A-Y-M-U-M-M-E at gmail.com to purchase tickets. At the door, it's a $5 premium on top of that, so $25 ahead to get in. That's cheap for an all-day seminar with Mark Passio, so what a treat that'll be. But tonight, ladies and gentlemen, the topic for the show is Mark Passio on Alchemy 2, or Mark Passio, Alchemy 2, this is the second part, entitled The True Great Work, What It Really Is and How to Do It. A lot of people are confused about the great work, and there are a couple of approaches to it. Last night we heard Bill Cooper's approach, which is kind of a dark take, but as Mark has shared with us, there is a dark occult, but there's a light occult as well, and every time they use a tool against us, that tool can be used for good. And so let's find out tonight what the great work is about. So without further ado, what I'm going to do is open the door to Occult Empire, and we're going to draw Passio on for Mark Passio Alchemy 2, The True Great Work. Don't go away. From the ramparts, announce a dark-clad rider, and he dismounts a weary steed. And as the oaken door opens, we know who it is immediately, the friendly face of Mark Passio once again in the chamber, enters the chamber of Occult Empire. Mark Passio, welcome back, good sir.
Bob, it's always a pleasure to be here on Occult Empire. Thanks for having me back.
Oh, sir, you are welcome anytime in the Temple of Occult Empire. We, of course, here in the temple, quietly step back and allow you to approach the dais, sir. So please step up, and sir, this is your home. Please speak, Mark.
Thanks so much, Bob. Well, tonight the topic that we chose for discussion was the true great work. And you hear so much in alternative media today about the dark great work, as I like to call it. People, in many cases, when they encounter the world of the occult and realize how occult knowledge has been being used in the last millennia, they usually take on a unidimensional perspective regarding the occult, and this is actually unfortunate. And they think that it's all bad, it's all evil, it's all negative, it's all used for control. And while occult knowledge has been being used in that capacity for countless years and is still being used that way today, that is not the be-all and end-all or the totality of what occult knowledge is all about. So while there is a great work that is indeed very dark, and it is about controlling and enslaving humanity and using the knowledge of the occult, which is the knowledge of the human psyche combined with the knowledge of the laws of nature, using that knowledge as a power differential over those who are kept ignorant of it, that is certainly one usage of occult knowledge, and it has been called the great work by these sorcerers of consciousness, as I like to call them, the mind controllers, the powers that be. They call what they are doing the great work. I feel that it is a complete misnomer. It is a bastardization of the term. There is a true great work, and then there is what they are doing and calling their great work. So you could say there are two different great works. And I was thinking about a place to start in describing this distinction, and I could think of really no other place than some symbolism. Because if we look at that very famous reverse of the Great Seal of the United States, which is depicted on the left-hand side of the back of the $1, the U.S. $1 bill. Of course, I'm referring to the pyramid with the all-seeing eye as the capstone, and then the Latin inscriptions above and below it. If we just simply break down that seal for a moment or two, or maybe a little longer than that, I could explain the distinction between these two forms of the great work, and perhaps it will become clearer in some people's mind. Then we can get into describing what is involved in the true great work, or what you might call the light great work, okay? So let's break down this symbol momentarily. At the top of the symbol in Latin inscription, you have the phrase Anuit Coeptis. Now, right here, we have the term work in the form of the Latin noun coeptis. Okay? Anuit is a verb in Latin, and it's in the first person third person singular format. Okay? So anuit means, and it's present tense, it means he, she, or it looks favorably upon, or simply favors something. It is giving its consent, it is giving its nod, it is giving its approval, okay? And it's he, she, or it. So it's not making a clear distinction in gender. It is just saying this thing looks favorably upon or favors, and then the noun is saying what does it favor or what does it look favorably upon, and that noun is then coeptus. In Latin, that means a project, an undertaking, something that you are actively doing, and it is ongoing. So you could simply translate that as a work of some kind, a task of some kind, a labor of some kind that is actively ongoing. It is something that is still being done. Okay, so we put them together, and we could translate Anuit Coeptus as he, she, or it favors our work, our project, or our undertaking. Okay, now the second Latin inscription underneath, much has been debated about this, I think needlessly, because if we only simply go to the source Latin, it takes on a very clear meaning. People who don't have any kind of a depth of field in studying Latin or, you know, some very simple distinctions in the Latin language want to insist that this phrase means something that it doesn't. And hopefully I have put that to bed a while back, and if not, I'll try to do it again here tonight. The phrase Novus Ordo Seclorum does indeed mean new world order, or you could translate it as new secular order, but it, however, definitely does not mean new order of the ages. This has been a very incorrect and persistently incorrect translation over the years by people who want to insist that the word seclorum is instead the word cyclorum in Latin, when in fact there is no A in between the S and the E in that word as depicted on the reverse of the Great Seal. So the word seclorum is actually a truncation. It's a genitive case truncation of the Latin seculus. The word seculus means world or universe. So novus, there is no doubt or contention of what it means. It means new. Ordo means order. And then seclorum is the genitive of the word world. So it means of the world, literally. So the possessive case of the world. Novus ordo seclorum hence means new order of the world, or new world order. Very, very, very clearly translated. And I think they're, you know, the people who insist that seclorum is instead the Latin term cyculus, okay, a truncation from cyculus, cyculorum or cyclorum, okay, would be how it would be said, and it would be spelled S-A-E-C-L-O-R-U-M if we were truncating it. That would mean of the ages, because cyculus, not seculus, but cyculus in Latin does indeed mean an age or a period of time. So that distinction clearly being made, we definitely know the translation of these Latin inscriptions now. It means he, she, or it favors our work, the new world order. Definitely what that means if it is properly translated, which I have just done, definitively just done. So then we have a pyramidal structure that is partially completed. It is, you could say, almost completely finished being built. And then there is a small capstone of light emanating from the top of the pyramid, inside of which, seemingly in another world or dimension, there is an eye that is looking into the scene. Now, what this pyramid and whole symbol represents is both great works that I have just previously described briefly. Okay, it is the great work of the dark occultists, the controlling class, who consider themselves the masters or the ruling class of the world, okay, and are doing the dark great work. It is also the true great work of the truly illuminated people living on the earth who are trying to raise the consciousness of others on the earth such that we can get out of the system of slavery that has been built up and is almost completed here on the earth. Okay? So now that begs to question and calls into mind, what indeed does this pyramid and this capstone of light with the all-seeing eye in it represent? And people often have this completely reversed, or they have it as very unidimensional and one-sided. And I think if we clearly outline this, people can see how there are two sides to the occult, and that shows through in how there are multi-dimensional or often two-sided or more multifaceted ways of decoding symbolism and not just seeing it in a unidimensional perspective. This is, of course, for any serious student of the occult, very important to understand that symbols do not represent one thing in many cases. They are complex, and they can mean many different things to many different people, many different adherents of different systems, but also a sigil like this, which is what indeed this is, a complex combination of symbols used to tell a story, an allegorical story, one symbol can often literally mean two different things at the same time, okay? And this is actually a beautiful symbol. I call this symbol, instead of calling it the reverse of the Great Seal of the United States, some people have termed it the symbol or the seal of all forms of masonry, because it describes both dark masonry and light masonry. Again, dark builders or light builders, a dark project being built or a light project being built, a positive project being built. I like to call it the symbol that describes the world in transition. That's kind of how I personally see this symbol. And it is a symbol of masonry. It is a symbol of alchemy. It is also a symbol of positive occultism and a symbol of dark occultism simultaneously. So this all hinges on what the pyramid and the capstone represents. So let's begin to break that down. The pyramid itself, the stone blocks of the pyramid that are partially and you could say almost completely finished being erected into a completed pyramid, represent slavery, ignorance, and darkness in our world. That's what those stones represent. The makers of the seal deliberately chose brick, stone, okay? Something that is heavy, something that is weighty, something that weighs things down. Something that erects barriers between things, that builds walls, that divides things when you build it up between different people or different communities, okay? We build walls with bricks. Bricks are barriers to something. They are used to create barriers, to erect barriers, okay? They are the thing that you would probably use if you wanted to describe what is the exact opposite of lightness. There is no better symbol to use than a hardened brick. It's the exact opposite of lightness in every way, okay? It is completely opaque. It's not even transparent. It's not even translucent. You can't see through it, okay? It is difficult to see through, okay, as is darkness and slavery and ignorance. It's difficult to transcend. So these are the barriers. You could look at these things as the barriers to that light. That light is the light of knowledge. It is the light of the creator of the universe, which is what the eye represents, that is seeing everything that takes place in this world from a higher dimension or perspective, if you will. All right? It is not something that is technically not of the world of matter. Okay, it may perfuse the world of matter, and it may give rise to the world of matter, but you couldn't identify it as anything that is of the world of matter, that form of higher consciousness. Hence, it is looking into the scene from a higher dimensional perspective, and it is shining its light into the world. But the light is not the bulk of the scene, you'll note. Okay, it is a small portion of the scene. It is only that small part of the pyramid that is illuminated at the very top. The rest of it is already calcified and hardened into brick. This represents that the light of the Creator is only contained in a very small portion, unfortunately, of humanity. And the rest is calcified and is stopped. It has been blocked from the light. It has been put into this tomb that pyramid with the capstone missing represents a tomb. It represents a trap for souls, or a tomb for souls, a deadened state, a non-spiritual, non-conscious state of awareness, of non-awareness, really, of unconsciousness, I should say. So what is being done in this scene is the pyramid is actually being built, and that is the dark work. If the pyramid were finished, what would happen to the light in the scene? It would go out. It would disappear. It would be blocked. Okay? If we finish this pyramid in stone, you have to look at that eye as being in the sky behind the pyramid in the scene. Okay? Or you could say it's floating over top of it, but if we finish that pyramid, that 3D pyramid in front, okay, the light would be blocked by the stone if we finished it in stone. You have to imagine that it's blocking out that eye and the light that is shining forth from that eye, and it would be finished in stone, in which case you would then have a completed pyramid in stone, which would represent the dark New World Order being completed, meaning a world of male dominance, total full spectrum masculine domination, okay, slavery, ignorance, darkness, etc., would be then complete. And the light of the Creator would be blocked out from the world permanently. In this interpretation of the symbol, you could also imagine that the ones who are performing that work, who consider themselves God, okay, would be like then the hidden eye in the scene. So here the eye would take on two components, okay? It would be being blocked out by the building project of the ones who consider themselves the masters or the owners of other people. And simultaneously, you could say, since they consider themselves God, these dark controllers, these dark occultists, the dark elite, okay, they would then be hidden and you would not be able to see them. They consider themselves, you know, the creator, the controller of everything, okay? And they would be permanently in the shadows, unable to be exposed, and their project, their male dominator world of slavery would be completed. This is the dark work, the dark great work. It is their great work. And in this instance, you could also then say the eye would take on a third perspective in that who is favoring the project being completed in this way? Well, that would be the dark god, would it not? Okay? That would be the force of chaos. That would be the force of division. That would be the force of darkness. That would be the force of ignorance. That would be the force of fear. Okay? You could call it Satan. You could call it the destroyer. Okay? You can call, give it any give any given number of names, but it is ultimately the force which shuts consciousness down. And I would simply term that force fear. So that dark god or dark force, the force which destroys the light, which destroys consciousness, could also be then being seen as the god at the beginning of the project who favors that work because that's what it wants done. That's its will, to shut consciousness down and create a world of darkness and slavery. So that is one way of seeing the symbol. Simultaneously, we could see the symbol as representative of the true great work, the positive great work, the light great work, the work of light occultism, or as I like to call it, de-occultism, or true alchemy. So in that sense, let's say our work as light masons, see, dark masons would build with those bricks of ignorance, separation, and illusion, right? Light masons would do the opposite. They would build with light. Well, you're not going to see an image there just building with light. The image of light is represented by the all-seeing eye in that scene. That it takes up a very small portion of it because it is not active enough in the world, in our lives, is not present enough in our lives. So we're starting at the same place of transition where there's mostly darkness and only a little bit of light, okay? The dark occultists want to finish that project of darkness and block out the remainder of the light. The light occultists want to do the opposite, which is to tear down that pyramid, to tear down the things which weigh us down, to remove them or transmute them, to take down the barriers to self-realization, to take down the barriers to the light. So the true great work is symbolically represented in this image as removing those bricks or transmuting them into light such that we are adding the light to the world and bringing it in more fullness down to the earth, such that there would be no pyramid there. The whole thing instead would be the all-seeing eye of the Creator and the light that that brings forward into all of our lives, being the only thing present in that scene without the pyramid. Okay? The date, of course, is 1776. You could say, in earnest, when the light great work may have begun here on earth, you know, through the American Revolutionary period, and also certainly the dark great work being ushered in a bigger way with the birth of a dark occult organization that spread its tentacles everywhere into Europe and beyond in the form of the Bavarian Illuminati, a dark occult organization. So the goal of the true great work is to transcend the barriers that weigh us down and block us and divide us and keep us back from the light, hold us back from where we say we want to go, which is into a world where there is more knowledge, more understanding, more wisdom, more freedom, more prosperity, etc. Okay? So that symbol right there, I think, is an encapsulation. It's a concrescence of both of these works and how they differ and how one group of occultists, the dark occultists, want to complete the world of ignorance, darkness, and slavery, and the other, the light occultists, or you could simply just say the de-occultists, the ones who want to make this hidden, so far hidden knowledge, thus far hidden, they want to bring it into the world for all to see, disseminate it, communicate it to others, and make it common sense knowledge so that people can then actively apply it in their lives and be wise as a result and then be a positive co-creator of our aggregate experience as a result of the application of that, hence to four hidden knowledge. So the true great work starts with the understanding of natural law. And we've gone over natural law almost ad infinitum, not only on this show, but certainly in my work and in my presentation series. So we're not going to completely re-break down natural law. I'll give very short definitions of what natural law is and what it means to understand it. So natural law is the universal, meaning everywhere present in creation, non-man-made, so inherent to creation itself, not written down by man, not invented by man, not a construct of the mind at all. It is an actual thing that is inherent in nature itself and can never be separated from the natural world. Universal, non-man-made, binding, meaning that it has an effect whether we understand it, whether we know about it, whether we're ignorant of it, whether we don't like it, whether we don't want it to exist. None of those things matter. Human perception has nothing to do with the existence and operation of natural law and whether it is in effect or not. And it is in effect at all times and places. There's nothing we could do to take it out of effect. There's nothing we could do not to be bound or affected by it. So that's what binding means. And binding and immutable, meaning unchangeable by anything that we or any other beings are capable of doing. Okay, so once again, universal, non-man-made, binding and immutable conditions that govern the consequences of the behavioral decision-making processes of beings with the capacity for holistic intelligence. That's as clear of a definition as I can give for natural law without people speculating about, well, what about the animal kingdom, you know, because everybody tries to apply the laws that govern the morality of human beings to animals and try to say, well, they don't live like that, so, you know, why are we held to a higher standard of behavior? Because our consciousness is at a higher level of complexity and capability than beings from simply just the animal kingdom. We have an animalistic component. We have an animal component to our consciousness, but it is not the totality of our consciousness. We have another side that is the human aspect of the being, okay, which a regular animal does not have, which makes us more complex and actually more conscious, and our form of consciousness is a higher form of consciousness than just any other animal. It is Satanism to believe that a human being is just another animal. As a matter of fact, that is one of what I would consider to be one of the major tenets of Satanism, is that a human being is no different than any other animal, and we should simply be living like any other animal. This is what Darwinian scientism followers actually see as the quote-unquote natural order. And let me emphatically state that is nothing of the kind. It is the exact opposite of the natural order when it comes to human beings. That may very well be the natural order. How animals interact with each other is natural to them. That is not our nature, because we are not simply any other animal. And for the people who still are stuck in that left brain, scientism-based, really ancient paradigm of believing that the survival of the fittest means the survival of the most ruthless, and that the proper way of being in the world is to emulate the psychopath or emulate the animal kingdom and try to come out on top of all your fellow men and women and just, you know, rule the roost of humanity with an iron fist, and somehow that is good, or that is natural, or that is orderly, or that can ever create order. I mean, I just don't even know what to tell them at this point. It actually, like, just saddens me to think that there are still people in the world who actually believe nonsense like that. And yet there are so many of them that think that this is the natural way, and somehow psychopaths are, you know, the apex of human civilization, and somehow they are the apex of human genetics. It goes back into, as a brief aside here, it goes back into this entrenched scientism-based notion of Darwinism, of macrobiological Darwinian theory, as being the basis for true evolution. And as I said, when we talk about just the propagation of genes, that isn't the totality of real evolution. This is what people have equated to evolution. Okay, it's like saying that intellect is the totality of intelligence, when clearly there is a whole other aspect to holistic intelligence, namely creativity, compassion, intuition, nurturing, etc. All the right brain qualities that are left out of most Westerners, or indeed most people in the world's definition of actual intelligence. You know, when we measure things like reading, verbal, and mathematical skills, we're not measuring holistic intelligence. We're measuring just intellect. Intellect is the first part of intelligence. Intellect, that's the intel part. And then gence, G-E-N-C-E, is the part that actually represents the right brain side, which is the creative aspect. It comes from the Latin genere. Okay, so we have the intella part representing the intellect, and then gens representing the Latin genere. The verb genere in Latin means to make or to create. So the creative side of the mind, the intuitive, the compassionate, the nurturing, the artistic and expressive side of the mind has to be taken into account when we're trying to determine holistic intelligence. So to equate evolution to just the propagation of the physical material is like trying to equate true intelligence to just intellect. It's not true. It doesn't work. And when people are trying to see it like that, they're missing a whole other side of the picture, which clearly doesn't enable them to get what the actual meaning of that term really is. So the people who think intellect is all there is to intelligence, they don't get what intelligence truly is. The people who think the propagation of genes, as put forward by this quote-unquote natural order Darwinian theory, is not the totality of evolutionary progression. So to call that evolution is a misnomer in and of itself. What we have to understand evolution as is the force which is willing consciousness to move forward and expand and evolve into greater and more complex forms. It doesn't mean just the propagation of DNA or genetic material. You can propagate DNA and genetic material and be devolving and be going through the process of the reverse of actual evolution. Just because you're moving forward in time and surviving doesn't mean you're evolving. okay? You can be degenerating and going into less moral and less conscious forms over time and still propagating your genes. So just the propagation of genetic material has zero to do with evolutionary progress. Okay, we have to see this from a higher level perspective, that what real evolution is about is betterment of a being, is coming onto higher levels of awareness and consciousness, being able to see holistic patterns, being able to see and understand the laws of nature in operation and our role within those laws of nature. So morality absolutely has to do with true evolutionary progression. And this is where I want to begin the description of what the great work really is. Okay? So the great work starts when we begin to step into the realms of hidden knowledge, and we then uncover things like the knowledge of the human psyche, like the laws of nature, like natural law. So natural law is the universal, non-man-made, binding and immutable conditions that govern the consequences of the behavior of beings with the capacity for holistic intelligence, all right, which is human beings are. Therefore, we are bound by these laws of conscience. We are bound by these laws of morality. So the great work begins when we start to understand natural law. So what is the understanding of natural law? We know what natural law is, but what does it mean to understand natural law? To understand natural law means definitively having conscience. Conscience is the definitive knowledge of the objective difference between right and wrong behavior. So people don't think of conscience as knowledge. Okay? Conscience, of course, is a form of knowledge. People think of conscience as a form of action. It is not a form of action. Definitively, let me state, conscience is not a form of action. The exercise of conscience is a form of action, okay? You're taking action. When you are exercising conscience, you are taking action. Conscience in and of itself is simply, purely knowledge, okay? It is knowledge, and you could call it understanding. Conscience is the knowledge of the objective difference between right and wrong behavior, meaning you know what actions are rights because they do not cause harm to other beings, and you know what actions are wrongs because they do cause harm to other beings. Once we have that knowledge, and again, just write in the word, con, meaning with or together in the Latin language, the prefix C-O-N, you tack it onto a word, it means together or with, and then the word science in English, the second part of conscience, con science, okay? Science comes from the Latin verb scio, scio sciere. Scio sciere in Latin means to know or to understand. So we put them together, and conscience literally means etymologically to know together, common knowledge. Conscience is the common knowledge of the difference between right and wrong. And unfortunately, most people don't have that knowledge, so it's no longer common. That this is what we need to understand before we can do the great work. We need to definitively know the objective difference between right and wrong behaviors. Now, what does it mean once we have understood natural law to be living in harmony with natural law? Okay, or what does it mean to live in opposition to natural law? So living in harmony with natural law is truly exercising conscience, meaning that we are truly enacting in our lives, through our behaviors, in our decision-making processes, we are choosing willfully to choose the right action over the wrong action, and we are then performing right action in our lives. That's what it means to live in harmony with natural law. To live in opposition to natural law means that we are ignoring conscience. We are ignoring the common sense knowledge of the difference between right and wrong, and we are willfully choosing to exercise wrong behavior over right behavior, and in doing so, through this coercive behavior, we are violating the rights of other beings, and then something happens in the world. When we either live in harmony with natural law or we live in opposition to natural law, we get a definitive result based on what we put out into the world through our behavior. So this is how natural law reflects back to us what we have put into the universe. When we live in opposition, when we live in harmony with natural law, we create all the things, we co-create in harmony with these laws, all the things that we say we want in life: peace, harmony, prosperity, freedom, order, goodness, justice, etc. Everything that a human being says they want present for themselves and for other people. So when we are living in harmony with natural law because we're willfully choosing right action over wrong action, order is created in our lives. Conversely, when freedom and order, I should say. Conversely, when we are living in opposition to natural law and we are willfully choosing behaviors that are harmful to other beings and violate their rights and cause harm to others, we are creating in our lives disorder, chaotic consequences, and ultimately slavery. We're bringing ourselves into deeper and deeper levels of slavery. And that brings me to what I would consider really the true law of attraction, what I have called the law of freedom. The law of freedom simply states that as morality increases, freedom increases. And this is in the aggregate of society. As more and more people are living in harmony with natural law, in the aggregate numbers, okay, the bulk of society, let's say the bulk of society were living in harmony with natural law, well, that society as a whole in the aggregate would be moving toward more freedom and more order in their lives. Conversely, if the whole society is living in opposition to natural law, freedom breaks down and the society goes into more and more disarray, more chaos, and more slavery, more bondage. So the law of freedom states that as morality in the aggregate of a society increases, then the freedom in the aggregate of that society also increases. As immorality in that society increases, then slavery and chaos in that society increases. And this is an unwavering, eternal law of nature. Can never be broken. Order, peace, harmony, prosperity, and freedom can not be created any other way than through the acceptance of the laws of morality and aligning our behavior to those laws. It's not that, you know, that it's possible to do it any other way. It cannot be done any other way. It's not possible to do. And no more than it is possible just to will yourself off the ground and counteract the law of gravity. Okay? It is, you are, as long as you are on this planet, you are bound by the law of gravity. If you're in the three-dimensional body, you're in the three-dimensional realm, you are incarnate as flesh here on Earth. You are bound by the physical laws that operate in this universe. Well, the same laws apply in the unseen realm, in the laws of, when it comes to the laws of morality. These laws are in operation whether you understand them or not, and you cannot countermand those laws. When you do things that are in harmony with them, you get one result. When you do things that are in opposition, you get the other result. And the universe does not care. It does not have human emotions as we do and take into account, well, why were you ignorant of them? I use the example, would the universe care if an ignorant one-year-old, okay, who had just learned to walk, okay, who's, you know, wandered away from his parents on a picnic, okay, let's say they're 1.5 years old, little toddler, almost, you know, going to be 2. They wander away from the picnic, and they're going toward the edge of a cliff. Steep edge, steep drop-off. The universe isn't going to care if that baby walks over the cliff. The laws that are applied to physical matter are still going to apply to that child. So nature isn't going to care whether the child just went over there in error and in lack of understanding, in lack of knowledge. It's still going to gravity is still going to have an effect. It's not, the universe isn't going to say, oh my God, this poor innocent child, you know, I can't allow this law to be in effect and, you know, suddenly suspend this law just because I care about that child's life. It doesn't work like that. These are impersonal forces that are in operation. It's not, it's nothing personal. It's what people have to understand about natural law. It's not a being sitting there with a, you know, a checklist or something like that on a tablet saying, Well, did he learn about any of this stuff? You know, did he talk to people? Did he watch videos? Did he listen to lectures? You know, did he attend groups where people were trying to understand these things? It doesn't care what you did or didn't do. These are laws that work flawlessly 100% of the time, like a computer program. I'm not telling people God's a computer program. I'm saying that the construct of the universe is like a computer program. It is bound by boundary conditions, laws that are like coded into it from its inception, in its nature. And these laws, just all they take into account is, did you do A? Yes, I did A. Well, then here's your result. This is the output. If you hit A on a keyboard, does the computer say, well, I wonder whether he really intended to hit A or not? Maybe he was trying to hit S, which is right next to A. Okay? The keyboard and the computer doesn't care whether your finger slipped and went over to the S key and you really intended to hit A. When you hit A on the keyboard, the A comes up on the screen because that's how the code is programmed. That's how the universe programmed natural law. The creator of the universe programmed natural law into creation. It's nothing personal. It's a code that's running. And that's why you call law code. People have interchanged those terms in many cases. It literally is computer code in the construct we call the 3D universe. You can't take it personally. All you can do is recognize this code, this set of codes, this law, these laws are in operation for my greatest benefit and uplift in consciousness. They are trying to will me into the direction of higher consciousness and understanding through willing me in the direction of evolutionary progression through the understanding of the laws of morality. They're not there as a prison mechanism. They're not there to defeat us. They're not there to eternally bind us as slaves. We're actually gifted with the free will of being able to make these behavioral decisions on our own with no one coercing us. Okay? You know, we are in full faculty of choosing our behavior. People don't want to believe that. They want to abdicate that personal responsibility and say, oh, no, I'm not in full command of what I am choosing for my behavior. Well, what are you, a puppet on a string? You know, is some other dimensional force hitting a key on the keyboard and you're just a piece of code in here? No, you're not. You have free will. This is a free will universe. A free will universe, okay? We have choice. We have say over what we will do and not do. We are not eternally bound to do or not do anything. We can make a decision and renew ourselves in the current moment. So where the great work begins is in understanding the force of natural law, okay? This eternal, unchangeable body of laws that govern the consequences of the behavior of intelligent beings, and understanding our free will within the 3D universe, okay, that we have, this is the random component, whereas natural law is the determined component. Natural law is the boundary conditions, the determined component of creation, the deterministic component of creation. Free will is the randomized component of creation. Okay, which we have been blessed with, we have been granted. And intelligent beings have free will. Non-intelligent beings, or beings that don't have the capacity for true holistic intelligence like the animal kingdom, don't have as much free will. They are actually run like more circuitry. They are actually run on pure instinct in many cases alone and don't have the full mental capacity to choose behaviors. Okay, we, however, do because we have cognitive capabilities in the mind. Okay, that we have the gift of the human psyche, which is much more complex and grants us more freedom than any of the other animals in the animal kingdom. And this is why we have to understand we are different than animals. We are not the same as animals. To say a human being is just an animal is wrong. It is incorrect. It is completely wrong. We are much more than just an animal. Do we still have an animal component? Yes, we do. We are biological like them in many ways, okay? And we have most of the animalistic components of the animal kingdom also integrated into our makeup. But we have so much more than that. We are infinitely more than that in our capacity to understand, in our capacity to grow epigenetically, meaning grow beyond genes, beyond just genetics. We can grow in consciousness, whereas most other animals do not have that gift to be able to grow in consciousness epigenetically. Okay? So where the true great work, the work of tearing down the male dominator structure of slavery begins is in the understanding of natural law and understanding of free will. Until we understand that, the great work cannot begin. It cannot progress in any being that doesn't understand the components of consciousness, that doesn't understand how natural law operates and how free will is actually present and is operating within us. Okay? We have to understand the components of consciousness, thought, emotion, and action. Understand what real non-duality means. Non-dual consciousness means that there is no contradiction between thought, emotion, and action within an individual. It doesn't mean everybody is the same. Everybody's on the same level of consciousness. Everybody thinks the same or does the same thing. That's not what non-duality means. It also doesn't mean that you can't show that this is different than this. That's simple delineation. That's distinction. That's making a discernment between two things. That's a very vital and important process. Now, you hear in the New Age movement a lot, oh, you're saying that this person's of a lower level of consciousness. Oh, that's divisive or non-dual thinking. Dual thinking. It's duality. No, it isn't. That's called discernment. That's called looking at two things, comparing and contrasting them, and understanding how they are either alike or different. Okay? And that's an analytical process of the mind that is very, very important if we want to be truly conscious and understand what's really going on here. So that's not what non-duality is about. Non-duality is an internal process. It's a process of removing the contradictions between your thoughts, emotions, and actions, such that you're a being that thinks, feels, and acts in non-opposition, in non-contradiction. All of those things are unified and on the same page. You won't do an action that you know is wrong. That's called dualistic consciousness. Okay? You wouldn't take part in continuing to propagate the world of slavery and illusion knowingly. So that's duality. That's oppositional consciousness. That's dual thinking. Okay? So this is what it means. Non-duality really means, as contrasted with this New Age variant of non-duality, is everything being somehow the same or at the same level. And this is going to really come into play when I describe what the great work is to do, what it means to do it. Because so many people will say, you are promoting dualism. You are promoting people being combative and against each other. And in many ways, I am promoting people being against a certain form of consciousness. See, the negativity against evil, no tolerance for evil is what the true great work is actually about. It is about saying, I know that this is bad. I know that this can't lead to order. I know that this is a violation of other people's rights. I know that doing this and continuing to do it will stifle evolutionary progression, not only of myself, but of my entire species. Therefore, I am going to label this through discernment and say, this is something that we don't want. This is something that is bad. You cannot be afraid of negative terms when you're considering the true great work. So this throws out almost all New Age teachings immediately, because the New Age wants to tell everybody it's all love and light. We don't need to pay any attention to the negative. We certainly don't need to make any distinctions about what's negative or positive. They want to think it's all good. Everything's positive. Well, this is utter New Age babble, okay? It's just utter nonsense that needs to be thoroughly rejected out of hand, because it doesn't take true discernment into the situation, and it doesn't say, is this moral or is this immoral? Is this right? Is this in harmony with the laws of nature? Is this in harmony with natural law? No. It wants to just, basically tell everybody, you're all one, you're all the same, and it's not true. People are at different levels of consciousness. We are of the same essence. We are of the same material, if you will, or non-material essence, however you want to look at it. We are of the same essence at the very base level, at the very fundamental level of consciousness, yeah, everything is pure consciousness, having an experience. You know, we are spirit in a human form. You know, energy, having an experience here as a human being to learn and to grow and to evolve. That doesn't mean that everybody's at the same level of understanding on that journey. And that doesn't mean that all levels of understanding along that journey are just as good as any other. Okay? It doesn't mean that somebody who has absolutely no understanding of conscience is as good of a person as somebody who lives conscience every day of their lives and chooses right action over wrong action in every situation. Of course that's a better human being. Of course that's a more evolved human being. You know, to say that that person wouldn't be a better human being than a person who just says, I want what I want and I'm going to kill anybody that gets in my way and take it, period, because I'm going to live like an animal. Well, would that somehow be the same as somebody who really truly understands conscience and morality and attempts to honor other people's natural rights? Of course the person who understands conscience and morality is a better and more evolved human being. So this New Age notion of never labeling anything as bad or worse than something else and just saying it's just an experience, okay, is bunk hokum, okay? This is feel-good pseudo-spirituality that has no role in the serious student's life if we're going to be considering what real spirituality is about. So now, once we understand the difference between right and wrong, we will fully grasp the concept that what we are living in right now in the world is a state of slavery, is a state of wrongness. We are living in a state of existence that is ensconced and trapped in immorality. In just about every way that you could possibly imagine or see, the people of this world continuously on a day-to-day basis continue to do things that violate the rights of other human beings and animals. On a day-to-day basis, we violate the rights of our fellow beings. We take the lives of our fellow beings. We take the rights of our fellow beings. We take the property of our fellow beings. We are in, right now, a state of existence that is like a prison or like a hell. And I don't say it eternally must be like that. I do not believe the universe or even Earth is a permanent hell. It can be changed. Consciousness must change. Consciousness must evolve for that to happen. And then we can make this a paradisical realm if we so choose. We can make this anything we want. You know, if this could be a heaven, this could be a hell. And it could change from one to the other. And quite rapidly, as a matter of fact. It is not something that is eternally set in stone to be one way. Anybody who thinks that is under an extraordinarily poisoned worldview regarding not only what's possible, but regarding the nature of reality. They have a sick, poisoned nature, worldview of the nature of reality. Now, I'm not telling you that will change. I said it can change, okay? There are prerequisites to creating change. The prerequisites are for the external conditions to change, what you are holding in your mind must change, because what you are holding in your mind, the things that you think, are what you are basing your decision-making processes on and then in turn basing your behavior upon. Therefore, what the entire world is like is based upon the aggregate quality of behavior in a whole society. I'll say that again. What the whole world is like is based upon the aggregate quality of behavior of the individuals that comprise the world. That behavior is based on their decision-making processes in their mind at an individuated level, and in turn, those decision-making processes that they are using to determine what behaviors they will enact are in turn based upon the information that they have come to understand or not understand. Okay? So therefore, what you hold in the mind and understand or don't hold in the mind and don't understand is going to lead to decision-making, that's going to lead to output of behavior in the world, that's going to lead to the result that you get in the world. Okay? And that's an unchangeable process. Okay? That it always works like that. That's what I mean by unchangeable. You're not going to step outside the way that works. What you can change is what do you hold in your mind? And therefore, what manifests on the other side of that equation, of that process. Okay? So in order to change the manifested result, You have to go back in that process past the choice of behavior, the decision-making processes that led to the choice of that behavior, to what are we putting into our mind? What have we come to understand or not understand? What do we need to understand? Okay? That is where the great work begins, okay? It begins once we understand how that process works. Then we can look at the aggregate quality of the experience that all of humanity is living and say, what needs to be done in order to change this manifested result on a grand scale? Well, invariably, we will come to the conclusion by just understanding that process that I've outlined, what needs to change is thought, is human thought, the way people think about themselves and the nature of reality. Until that changes, the manifested result can not change. Not only won't it change, it is an impossibility for that to change. And right now, we're getting the result that we're getting in the aggregate because so many people think a certain way that is out of alignment with truth and natural law. Only when we can bring more people's thoughts into alignment with truth and natural law, and then their behavior follows those thoughts. See, it's not just about knowing and understanding. It's about doing it. It's about living it through action, through the behaviors that you choose. So it goes back to that old fundamental axiom, to know and not to do is not to know. You cannot truly claim the knowledge of something unless you're actually engaged in the behavior, okay? So you can't say, I know all about natural law, and you're not actually living natural law in your life. You're not actually choosing right action over wrong action. I'm not saying people need to be perfect or they can't slip up, but in general, you have to be outputting far more aggregate good quality behavior through not causing harm to others than any decision-making processes that lead to behaviors that cause harm or support the harm of others. So, and again, no one is perfect in any of these, in any of this. Perfection doesn't exist in this realm. If people are expecting perfection, get over it. You're going to be waiting a whole long time for that to occur. You'll be waiting eternally for that to occur because perfection is the totality of creation itself and the mind that underlies that, you know, the unified consciousness that underlies that, okay? It is the realm of pure potentiality where perfection lies. In the 3D manifested universe, there's no such thing as perfection. We can attain to that. We can aspire to that. You're not going to reach the totality of perfection, certainly not in a individuated life, in an incarnated physical, as an incarnated physical being. Get over that if you think that's what enlightenment is. I mean, that is the most ridiculous, nonsensical view of enlightenment that I've ever even heard, and many people still believe that that's what enlightenment is all about, is being perfect. Perfection is unattainable in the 3D realm. Enlightenment, however, is attainable in the 3D realm, because enlightenment is about what we know regarding what's truly going on around, within and around us. So to go back to this notion of the true great work, what the true great work is to do is no less than to change the minds of the people of this planet. The true great work on Earth is to change the minds of the people on this planet such that they understand natural law and begin to live in harmony with it. Now, what I have just described there is more likely than not the most difficult, laborious, and absolutely effort-filled task that anybody could possibly ever come up with to try to do. This is why the people of Earth hate the true great work. This is why the people of Earth do not want to do the true great work. It's not called the great vacation. It's not called the great pleasure. Okay? It isn't called the great bliss, New Agers. Oh, if you do the great work, you will receive great bliss. It's not about just feeling bliss. okay, and experiencing blissful emotions. This is a drug that is being pushed off through people through the New Age movement and through the absolute abusive forms of meditation and yoga to create endogenous morphins or endorphins, morphine within the body created through so-called spiritual practices, you know, which is never what these practices were intended to be used as. They're very important if we understand them in their proper usage. So it's called the Great Work for a reason. It's going to involve effort. The scientific definition of work is the ability to create change through the application of force. That's what work is. It is the usage of force to get something done in the world. Now, notice I said force. I did not say violence. Again, we have to understand through our understanding of natural law the difference between force and violence. Using violence always is violating someone else's rights, okay? But applying force to something means you're applying pressure. You're putting pressure on it. You are attempting to move it. That's when you try to move a weight, you are applying force to it. You know, if I need to move this table here with this computer on it to a different location, I need to apply force actively. Otherwise, it's not going to just magically move from one place to another. Well, humanity is the same thing. They're weighted down. They're not just going to magically move from one place to another. Okay? A force is going to have to be applied. A force in consciousness is going to have to be applied. And this is what people don't want to understand. They believe erroneously through absolutely deceptive teachings and teachings that are propagated in many cases unknowingly and by rote that the force of evolutionary, of, should I say, epigenetic progression in consciousness, that consciousness is just automatically going to move upward without us having to do anything. And let me tell you something, folks, it does not work like that. Until will, effort, and force are applied to consciousness, consciousness will sit there motionless like a weight on a table. That's what the laws of inertia are about. You think they don't apply to consciousness? They apply to the physical world, but not us. Okay? An object at rest tends to remain at rest. An object in motion with momentum behind it tends to remain in motion. And it's easier to keep it in forward motion because there's already force applied and momentum is working in your favor. Conversely, when we're moving in the opposite direction and we want to slow something down and get it moving 180 degrees in the reverse direction, that's going to involve a great amount of work, of force. Imagine a locomotive moving 200 miles an hour in one direction with you know, all of its fuel continuing to press for that, you know, and it's not slowing down and it's not applying the brakes. What would it take? How much effort and work and application of force would it take to pull that locomotive back in the opposite direction? A whole lot. And that's what humanity is right now. We're a locomotive going down the tracks in the de-evolutionary progression in consciousness. And in order to move that forward in the opposite direction that it's been going for millennia, force is going to have to be applied. It's not going to be a piece of cake. It's going to be something that is going to be hard work. And the alchemists in the ancient traditions had a saying, labore et constantia, which means work and constancy, work and persistence, never-ending work, work that is going to have to continuously be applied, force that is going to have to be continuously applied in order to move it in that other direction. And as soon as you up-let on that force, you know what happens? It starts sliding back. You can look at the universe as a hill that you have to move upward. That's how evolution works. Now, what is the force of gravity that's making you slide backwards down that hill? That's called entropy. That's called involution. It's the force that works against evolution. Well, what is the ordering force? What is the epigenetic ordering force? That's the evolutionary force, and it will take you so far biologically until you get to the point where you have the capacity for true intelligence. But then what takes over? Free will takes over. Notice what I just said. Free will takes over at that point. That becomes the ordering principle. That becomes the force that drives evolution forward. We have to will ourselves forward. It happens on its own when it is in the realm of pure biology, when it is in just the realm of ordering the matter. The universe does that on its own, okay? Forms get ordered on their own. Galaxies get created by the universal forces. Okay, you can look at them as principalities, angels. It doesn't make a difference. Higher dimensional beings, whatever you want to look at those forces as. Okay, you could just look at them as natural forces. Okay, they are operating automatically. That's an autopilot mode. Once you get to a point where there is consciousness at a higher complexified level involved, and now the being has the ability to comprehend the forces that are at work, now you have free will operating. That's where the universe lets off. And it says, well, I'm not going to do this on my own because that would be a violation of rights that others have. Do you want to stay where you're at? Do you want to go forward? You're not a puppet here. This is a free will universe. You're in a free will zone, ladies and gentlemen, in case you haven't figured that out yet. God's not making every single event in the universe happen. We're making many of the events in the universe happen. Okay, the natural events and the natural laws, that's controlled by the creator of the universe. You don't have any say about how those function. What you have to say about is how will you behave in the presence of those laws. That's called free will. And you do one thing, you get one result. You do a different thing, you get another result. So you can create in a multifaceted ways, and you can get multifaceted forms as a result of how you are creating, whether you're creating consciously or unconsciously. And what we have to understand is when we are creating in full consciousness of these laws, we are actively applying our free will to move our evolutionary progress forward. That's the force that counteracts the force of involution, or what has been called in the scientific realm, entropy. It is the ordering force. Free will is the ordering force that counteracts the disordering or chaotic force of entropy, or what is, as it is known in the occult realm, as involution, the force that counters the evolutionary force. We now are in, the reins are in our hands is what I'm telling you. This is actually phenomenal news for people who are paying attention and really understanding this. Okay, people want to think, oh, somehow we're the victims of fate. We are not the victims of fate. The ability to move forward in consciousness and evolutionary progress in our species, that capability rests firmly with us. The reins of driving the evolutionary force forward are firmly in our hands because we have that free will. We just have to use it. We have to apply the will. See, this is so in keeping with what we described, I believe it was the last show we did on Thelema, okay? This so describes what Thelema really means as will. It's aligning our individuated will with the will of creation. Well, what is the will of creation? Does it want entropy? Does it want dissolution of forms? Is the universe trying to order things or is it trying to break things down? Well, it puts a force there that you have to struggle against to give you, you know, it's like, you know, if there's going to be a sharp blade, you're going to need a grindstone, okay? It needs something there to counterbalance and move against, okay? And it's given us free will. So what do you think it wants for us? Does it want us to devolve or does it want us to evolve? And I feel it does want to go in a particular direction. It wants higher ordering. It is a complexity-conserving machine. It wants more complexity. It wants more order. It wants more freedom. It wants more truth. It wants evolutionary progression, not involution, not just continued entropy. Entropy is a force that is always at work in the universe because that's that grindstone for the blade that we're trying to sharpen, okay? And the free will acts as the pushing force. It acts as the force that is going to order things and bring higher levels of complexity and understanding and consciousness into the equation and then ever move things forward. When we align our will to the higher will of creation, which is saying it wants things to move forward, it wants things to progress, it wants things to grow higher in consciousness and awareness, okay? When we align our force, our will to that force, there's nothing that can stop us because we are aligning our force with the will of the universe itself. With, you could call it the will of God if you want, if you're comfortable with that term. What's going to counteract that force? Nothing. It's the strongest force in anything, everywhere present. The problem is so many of us are ignoring that will. So many of us are refusing to do that work because is it easy? And I'm not going to lie and sit here and try to blow smoke up people's rear end and say it's just easy and it's a piece of cake. There's nothing to it. Based on where we're at right now, it's hard work. It doesn't have to be this hard. It actually is a lot easier than how hard it's going to be based upon the corner that we have jammed ourselves into. We've made more work for ourselves than was necessary with how deep into darkness and ignorance we have allowed the human species to slip because we've stopped doing the great work as a whole, as a people. There's isolated pockets of individuals scattered to the four winds of the earth who are still doing the great work. And most people have said, that's too hard for me, I'm out. But they're not out. They're very much in the mess. You know, this is what, again, this goes back to that concept of out in thelema, as we talked about in the last show, what it means to be out of mind control, to be out of the involutionary slipstream and to step into the evolutionary slipstream of creation, to be consciously creating one's aggregate reality in a wise way. So what does it actually mean to do this? Again, the great work is to change the way the people of Earth think. That's the great work here. I'm sure on other planets, the great work, you know, is the work that they need to be doing may be slightly different. But right now, here on Earth, again, I'm always talking from the perspective of being here now, not worrying about other planets, other dimensions, other times, the past, the future. Everybody wants escape, you know. They don't want to deal with what's going on here and now. Everything but anything but that. You know, talk about time travel, talk about other dimensions, talk about other beings, talk about other realms, talk about other species. How about humanity on Earth 2014? Let's talk about that and what needs to be done, okay? But that's highly unpopular, okay, because that brings people and roots them down onto the planet and says, what are you doing to change things? What are you doing to end the current human condition of slavery on Earth? Okay, and most people, you know what they'll answer with that? Goose egg, silence. They have nothing to answer with because they're not doing anything. Okay, and I understand you really can't truly be fully active in that process until you have enough knowledge. But that doesn't mean you wait forever. That doesn't mean you just sit on the sidelines watching like a spectator sport. Oh, it's really great what Mark's doing over there. Hey, Bob's doing a good job on his show. Hey, we got some other researchers over here. They're doing great. Well, it's all a spectator sport until you're involved and on the playing field. Life is not a spectator sport. We're asking for help, ladies and gentlemen. That means you. That means you listening. No, not the other person. You. Yes, you. Yes, you, the one who's looking back from the mirror, you, okay? And again, highly unpopular. I realize how unpopular what I say is to many people. I'm not naive in that sense. I am not seeing the world through rose-colored glasses and thinking everybody's saying, Mark, it's so great what you're telling us. You know, I get it, folks. I get the imperative that I'm speaking with. I get how unpopular it is to people because what I'm telling you in no uncertain terms is if this is going to change, it's up to you to change it. It's not going to change magically. There's no savior coming to rescue us, okay? Contrary to popular belief, the Galactic Federation of Light isn't descending in their crafts to come and rescue the idiot species called humanity from its ignorance. It's not going to happen. Get over it. Get over it. It's wishful, magical thinking that is New Age hokum, okay? If we're going to save ourselves from this situation, we need knowledge, we need care, we need courage, and most of all, we need persistent willpower. No one wants to hear this. They want to be told, it's just a natural progress. It's going to happen on its own. It's going to unfurl organically. All you got to do is sit back and watch and observe. Just observe. Okay? New Age BS. A complete nonsense. We need to take an active role in our evolutionary progression because right now the reins are in our hands. The natural forces of ordering, the principles of order got us to where we are biologically now, okay, and is helping to continue to work out things in the biological domain with human beings because, believe me, there's another story to that where we, you know, have been seriously messed with in the biological domain, which we won't get into tonight, but I will be getting into in big ways on my What on Earth is Happening shows in the future. But I'm talking about, in general, the ordering force in creation takes biological species up to a point, and then once they develop the capacity for intelligence, it lets off and it says, you need to take it from here because you have free will now. It imbued free will into that creation, and now it's saying, the game is yours now. Do what you want. Make what you want. What do you want to make? And humanity has responded and said, let's make a prison and live in it forever. Real great, real wise choice, you know, couldn't have done any better. Yeah, we can make anything, anything. You mean literally anything we want to create? Yes, anything you want to do, you have free will. What do you want to make? How about a prison? Sounds like a great idea, doesn't it? You know, I mean, and this is what we have to transcend. We have to transcend this stupidity. We have to transcend these completely erroneous beliefs that have no basis in truth that we continue to stay attached to believing. What have I just described there? Completely erroneous dogmatic belief systems that have no basis in truth and only serve to hold us back from our progression from where we say we want to go in evolutionary terms. That's called a false religion, ladies and gentlemen. It is a false religion. And what the great work, and religion means from the term religare, we've covered this before, it means to tie back, to hold back, or to thwart from forward progress. So a false religion is going to thwart us from forward progress in consciousness and in our evolutionary progression in consciousness. Okay? When we understand what the false religions are, what the great work is to do is to dissolve the false religions. And again, this is that concept of breaking down that which has been calcified, okay? Getting down to the pure essence that lies underneath all of the calcification. This is the process of alchemy. It's a process of dissolution, of breaking something down. It's not about doing anything new. It's about taking what's there, breaking it down, getting all the crud and the impurities out, okay? And then you're left with a pure essence. It's an apophatic process. The great work is an apophatic process. It means it works through negation. It doesn't say, here's all the new things you need to do. It says, here's what you're doing that is untrue, that is false, that is immoral, that you need to stop doing, that you need to stop doing. Again, highly unpopular. And you have things like the New Age movement that says, never try to teach anybody by saying, don't do this. It's pure bunk. It is pure pseudo-spiritual, psychobabble, nonsense, garbage to tell people, you should only ever state anything in the affirmative. You should never tell anybody, don't do something. Sure you should. Why should you explain to a child why not to run out into the street? Because a car could be coming, and that car is going to be a whole lot harder and moving with a whole lot more momentum than a little child who's pretty much a bag of bones and blood. And if they get clobbered by that car, it's not going to be a pretty sight. So more likely than not, you want to explain to the child in as soon as you possibly can, if you live in an urban environment of any kind, why it's probably not a good idea to go wandering into the middle of the street without at least first completely checking in all directions whether a car is coming or not. You do want to say what not to do, okay, because we're engaged in harmful behaviors that we need to stop doing. And they all comprise religion, false religion. I want to qualify that because there is a positive term. Religion can also mean a positive thing. Just like the Great Seal is both works, both great works, the dark great work and the light great work, okay? Religion is two things as well. False religion holds us back. True religion moves us forward. And I would tell people there's only one true religion. There's only one true religion, truth and the truth of natural law. The truth of the dynamics that are inherent in nature is the only real religion. Until we understand those things and understand that they are working toward evolutionary progression in consciousness, in morality, to help to make intelligent species more moral beings, okay? Until we understand that force, we can't make any headway. We can't make any progress because we have not taken truth into ourselves. Truth is the true ordering religion. And religion, in that sense, comes from the term religare, which can also mean to reunite with. That which has been separated from a source can be reunited or tied back or bound back to the original source. So religion, as in its etymological roots from the term religare, I would describe a false religion as being this first definition that I gave. Religare in Latin means to bind, to tie back, to hold back, to thwart from forward progress. False religions do that. Religare also can mean to reunite with once something has been separated from something else. You reunite it. You tie it back to. Okay? So in that sense, that's describing true religion. And only truth can do that. Only truth can reunite us with who we are. We need to be reunited with truth. That's what coming into true religion does. We are, in doing that, we are reuniting ourselves with truth. And then we are living according to natural law. So the great work is to assist others in going through that process of personal transformation to reunite with truth, so that we can all move forward together. Because we are, see, evolution doesn't happen just in individuated pockets. We are actually moving as an entire species together. People think, oh, there's going to be this big separation and break off. There's going to be an ascension of one class of people and a descension of others. It doesn't work that way. We are all in this together. See, that's duality consciousness. Real unity consciousness knows that one who is in real unity consciousness knows we are all in this together, and we are all going to evolve together, or we all are all going to devolve together in our experience. That doesn't mean I can't evolve in consciousness at an individuated level, but I will still be ensnared and entrapped in the actual real world 3D situation where the entire species around me is devolving. Okay, and it's pulling me into that morass and abyss with them. And this is where the New Agers don't get it. They think, oh, it's all okay. That's okay. No, it's not okay. It's not okay to just sit back and allow the force of entropy and involution to take everybody. And you think it's all okay just because you know what's going on and because somehow you become more evolved. No, that's not what the great work is. That's not what spirituality is. That's like saying, as long as I'm okay and everybody else around me is suffering, screw them. Is that spiritual? Is that evolved? It's nothing of the kind. Okay? Real spirituality and really doing the great work is saying, if I understand what the truth is, I have to help these poor people out here who are stuck in darkness and illusion to also understand it so we can all move forward together and create something better in our lives. That's the real great work. That's real spirituality. So what are these religions that are holding us back? We have to clearly define these religions, because until we understand what these religions that hold the progress of evolutionary development and consciousness, epigenetic evolution, okay, until we know what the forces that are holding those things back, okay, we don't know what we have to dissolve, to get rid of, to get out of our makeup so that we can purify and move forward. Okay, that's what this this dissolution process is all about. We have to crumble away our religions, our false religions. Again, I should always qualify that and say false religions, okay? The false religions, there are five, okay? And people would say, well, aren't there a whole lot more religions on the planet than that? Yes, if you only consider cultural religions, okay? I'm grouping all of them as one thing, as one type of religion. The cultural religions, meaning things like Christianity, Judaism, Hinduism, Buddhism, Shintoism, Taoism, etc., all of these things considered religions culturally in different areas of the world, okay, with their followers, etc., I group as one item. That's cultural religion, what has been traditionally referred to as religion in the world, world religions, okay? All of which have some valid seeds of truth, but all of which also act as control mechanisms in the world to hold people back from a total understanding of truth through a total understanding of natural law. So that is one of the religions, cultural religion, one of the false religions, because an ism, just saying, I am this one thing and everything else is invalid, is going to hold you back. That's limitation in thinking. That is limitation in understanding. And again, it isn't to say there aren't some good core seeds of real spirituality and real truth contained in any of those given religions. I'm not knocking every single one of them and saying they're all invalid. I'm saying if you only consider one and say everything else is invalid, there's nothing I could glean from studying this topic of inquiry or understanding this cultural religion or this tradition or this science, well, you're limiting yourself. And limitation is moving in the opposite direction of progression. It's not expansion, it's shutting down through fear often. So that's the first religion, cultural religion, the first false religion. The second false religion is also a right-brained aspect. That's the New Age movement, which I've been talking about. This is the catch-all for anybody of a right-brained imbalance, form of imbalance toward the right brain hemisphere that does not subscribe to any of the many cultural religions. So that's the second right brain form of religion. Then we have two left brain forms of religion. I've also talked about one of them, scientism. This is not real science that goes wherever the evidence or the truth leads. This is science as practiced and funded by institutions, scientific institutions that are funded with government grant money. And whatever the backers, the funders, want the scientific evidence to show or to promote, that's generally the direction that that science looks, and anything to the contrary, it won't publish, okay? And anything to the contrary of entrenched paradigms that mean lots of money, publishing rights, tenure in universities, etc., forget anything to the contrary being brought forward by scientism. It isn't real science. It's the veneer of science. It's the illusion of science. Okay? We're not doing real science in the world today. Okay? Real science would look so much drastically different. Real science works like this, folks. If there was a technology that can completely obviate the need for any fossil fuels, so-called fossil fuels, it would be developed and implemented in humanity immediately. That's not going to be done, and that's going to be held back, and even the research into things like that in free energy technology is going to be held back because there's too much money to be lost in bringing forward those technologies, and there's too much control to be lost in bringing forward those technologies. So you know what science does? It says, yes, master, I won't go into that box, okay? That's daddy's hidden closet, and I don't go there because I'm told that I'm a good little boy, and I don't go into those places. You think that's real science? It's a joke, is what it is. And anybody
that's
thinks that's real science is a religious advocate. That is their religion, scientism. That's what scientism is. Left brain religion, false religion. The last and final, there's two more. The second and final left brain imbalanced false religion is authority, the religion of the belief in a certain class of human beings having a right, quote-unquote, to issue commands to other human beings that they call laws, and those human beings who they consider basically their subjects who are bound by their laws have a moral obligation to obey those laws whether they are in keeping with natural law or not, whether they are in alignment with morality or not. This is a total illusion based on a diseased psyche. I've talked about it so much in my work. It's worth repeating here today, but I just want to explain it as one of the left brain false religions, okay? And we can get into that ultimately this is really the thing that is holding us back the most as a species is the belief in authority, okay? And then there's one universal overarching religion that destroys both hemispheres of the brain and keeps people from looking into true religion, which is truth, and that's called money. Money is the ultimate religion. It is the God, it has become the God of this world. And I tell people all the time, if your God is a piece of paper with no real value, then pretty much you probably deserve your own enslavement, if that's your notion of what a value system really is. Because it's not anything of the kind. It's an illusion. It's a control system. It's not based in anything that is real. And all it does is divide people. You want to talk about duality consciousness. That's the thing that is set up there to keep people in both of these schisms of left and right brain imbalance. Keep our attention focused on this nonsense that isn't really worth anything. See, that's the false one eye. Okay, it's the God that is propped up as God by the dark workers, and in doing their great work, that is their tool, the monetary system, okay? Because it is so hard to escape from it because it is the most deeply entrenched belief or false religion, and it binds all the other false religions together. It is at work in the New Age community. It is at work in cultural religions through the vast amounts of money they take in through donations and collection plates and selling trinkets, okay? It is ensconced in the scientism community through government grant money, okay, and is completely ensconced in politics and the so-called authority religion. That's what backs that whole religion up and makes it possible through funding, okay, of coercive projects and coercive institutions, all right? And people continue to take part in all of these other institutions for the very reason that they're being offered more of their paper god. Well, a species that has a paper as a god, like I said, they're in the right place, and it's called a prison. And that's where they really belong until they stop believing in that nonsense, okay? Until we stop believing in all of these religions, in the aggregate, humanity belongs in a cage. Okay? And that's highly unpopular, too, and people will deride me and say, how dare you say that? How could you say something like that? Does a people who believe in total illusion and try to make illusion reality, do they really belong free or walking around? Or is that somebody we would say belong? I would say Earth is actually less of a actual prison than it is an institution. This is an insane asylum. The aggregate quality of consciousness on Earth is insanity. Okay, that's really what describes our overall body of consciousness as a people, because we all believe in illusion. People believe in that which is not real, is that which is not existing in nature. That's called an insane person. That's called an insane society. All of these things are not real, and yet we believe in them so firmly that we're willing to do harmful behavior to others because we're attached to something that isn't real. Could you imagine anything being more insane? This is what humanity is. So we belong sequestered from the rest of the universe by rights. The rest of the universe shouldn't have to deal with this until we become intelligent enough to understand that what we are engaged in is pure folly and illusion and stop engaging in it. Then we'll be able to be let out of the institution called Earth and meet the rest of the community. But until we go through that process of awakening through the great work, don't expect any level or modicum of freedom here. Expect the reins to get tighter and tighter and tighter, because when people become more and more and more insane, what happens? They get shackled down to the bed tighter and tighter to prevent them from doing harm to themselves and others. And that's where humanity is at. We're in an insane asylum by our own making. Nobody else is doing this to us right now. We continue to propagate the worldview of the dark occultists. We continue to do the work of the dark occultists. Nobody wants to take that responsibility. Nobody wants to say, humanity is enslaving humanity. We are our own enslavers because we will not step up and say, no, I will not continue to believe in this, and I will not continue to perform these actions. Again, the apophatic variant of things is the most highly unpopular way of describing how we get from here to there, how we get from this place of low consciousness to a place of higher consciousness. No one wants to hear it stated like that. They want to hear it, you know, stated as, oh, it's all just such a wonderful, easy progression that's organic. The universe is backing us and it's got our back, and, you know, all these other beings have our back. We have to do this alone for ourselves with our own strength and our own willpower. This is what is lacking in humanity. The masculine component of consciousness is what is so lacking in humanity. It keeps us in this slave think that someone else is responsible for me. I am their property. They are the one who has to uplift me. They are the one who has to guide me. No, you are the one who has to guide yourself. You are the one who has to be your own master. You are the one who has to be your own guru. You are the one who has to be your own intermediary between you and the divine essence that underlies everything in creation. No one else can do that for you. But we can assist in that process. The alchemists of the world can assist by pointing someone into the right direction of the knowledge that they need to incorporate and understand. And that is part of the great work. And that cannot be done timidly either. No more than the work of evolving ourselves through will should or can be done timidly. You have to step into that state of empowerment and do it. It's an active, forceful, willful, masculine principle. And that is not discounting the sacred feminine principle of non-aggression, non-violence. I am a strong advocate of the non-aggression principle, the sacred feminine energy, nurturing, true care, compassion toward others, okay? Empathy, deep emotion. This is what sets our compass. That's the very compass. It's that care is the generative principle that needs to be, to lie under our actions and drive our actions. Again, this goes back to thelema, love under will. Well, unless the will is being driven and supported by love, where's it going to go? Nowhere. You know, you have to literally look at that as an equation. Like, you know, write down the word will on top, okay, of a piece of paper, draw a line. Okay, you could represent that line as like a plane or a board or something like that underneath the word will, and then write the word love under it. Love is the foundation upon which the will has to be built, and love is what's going to move the will forward. You're going to lift up that whole thing. You're going to lift up love from the bottom, okay? That's the generative principle. That's the base of everything we do, and then will is going to be uplifted as a result because it's resting on top of that foundation. That's what was meant by that statement.
Mark, that's a great point out, if I can comment really quickly, that to see that as the old school fraction when we were kids in school, the common denominator in that equation is love.
That's
love
right.
Under will. Will is the numerator, whatever, on top. And that's, it was tough to get a handle on, but that's exactly, so thank you, Mark, for clarifying
yes.
that. Will is subservient to the love. Love is the denominator in that.
That's
and
right.
Pushing that will forward. And
that's
the combo. Thanks, Mark.
And what we have to understand that form of love as is there were three kinds of love talked about in specifically the ancient Greek mystery traditions of consciousness. There was philia, which is the love between brothers and sisters, the platonic love. It could also mean mental love, okay? And that was let's start with Eros. Eros was romantic love, okay? This is what you, the love between a man and a woman, romantic attraction, etc., okay? Caring about your spouse in the sense of, you know, attraction to them, etc. Okay, romantic love is Eros. This was seen in the mystery traditions as actually a very important form of love, but the lowest of the three. Then you had mental love. This is when you are extending, it's not only what you care about in the day-to-day interactions with you and other human beings, but it's fraternal love, okay? The love between brother and sister, the love between friends, the love between all members of a community, extending love out. I would say that needs to be extended out to also other non-human beings as well. Beings that are not just our species, but all beings. So that's the second, and what I would consider a even higher form of love is philia. This is, again, where the word philosophy is based on, the love of wisdom. Philia, philios, sophos, wisdom. Okay. So then you have the highest form of love, that was taught in the ancient Greek mystery traditions, which was agape. Now, agape is universal love. Agape is alignment of our individuated will with the will of creation. Agape is the expansion of consciousness to incorporate the laws of nature and incorporate the will of creation into the equation of what you are doing in life. It is universal, pulling back and seeing the really big picture of how everything works and then aligning your life to those forces, okay, which are about uplift and growth and forward progression in consciousness, all right, learning and growing here. That's agape. That's the expansive force of consciousness. And that's what I, how I define love. That's the way that I try to explain to people, this is how we need to understand love. You can look at it as love with all capital letters. Distinguish it from, like, look at Eros as love with all lowercase letters. You know, like as in I love you, the statement that a husband may make to his wife or a wife to her husband, okay? Then look at, you know, philia as love with a capital L, okay? You're pulling back and saying, I care about people, okay? I care about what happens to you. I empathize with what happens, okay? So that's a higher form of love. It's pulling back and it's more awareness. It's not just saying I love you because you're directly in my life or you're my immediate family member. It's saying, I care about the well-being of all beings, okay? Then agape is truly universal love. That's higher consciousness itself. That's alignment with truth, that kind of love. Look at that as love with all capital letters, all uppercase letters. If you want to, you know, delineate it in English, and since we don't really have, you know, we have different forms of expressing care, but really only one word to mean, that means love, okay? These three words, eros, philia, and agape, really delineated these types of consciousness, okay? One is a very personal, and it's only taking some people into account. Then you go up to a higher level, it becomes wider in its scale, in its breadth, and it becomes maybe possibly even global, and then you go up to agape, and that's universal love. The love I'm talking about that has to underlie our will is universal love. It's agape, okay? And I'm not discounting the importance of the other two forms. I'm just saying that's when I talk about this in conjunction with the true evolutionary progression and doing the true great work, the love that needs to underlie it is the agape form of love, just to clearly make that clear. Okay? So what we need to do in performance of the true great work is to break down the belief universally throughout this planet, okay, globally I should say, the belief in the false religions. Now listen to what I just said there and listen to how difficult that work is going to be. I didn't say impossible. I'm never going to tell you this work is impossible. It is absolutely possible. It can be done. Will it be done? That's an entirely different question and an entirely different story. And I don't know whether it will be done or not. It doesn't have to be done. We could be destroyed, folks. Humanity can go away, you know? We won't be the first. We won't be the last, okay? Species come in and out of existence in their progression through consciousness all the time. Humanity can go away. And more likely than not, that seems to be what we are choosing. I'm not telling you it has to go that way. I'm telling you based on where consciousness is now, if I were a betting man, I'd bet on humanity going away or being permanently enslaved and devolved into a different form that is no longer possible of even re-evolving into a human form. I bet on that outcome. I would certainly put my money on that outcome based on where we're at now, as opposed to truly accomplishing the great work. That being said, while I may be a pessimist in that realm, that being said, I will never tell anybody that it is not possible. It is 100% possible if we want it bad enough, if we care to do this work enough, and if we are relentlessly persistent in the application of force when it comes to speaking the truth into the universe. If we do the great work with those qualities at in operation, okay, it can be done. Can be done. Different than will it be done. I don't know the future, okay? Don't ask me whether this will definitely occur, because I'm just going to tell you I don't know. That's not up to me. That's not up to me alone. That's up to everybody working on this planet. Whether, and we're always doing one of the forms of the work, whether we know it or not. If we're actively involved in changing consciousness for the better, we're involved in the great work, the true great work. If we're not doing anything, if we're not involved in that work, we are doing the dark great work. There are only two ways of doing it. You're always co-creating reality. And if you're creating it consciously, you're doing the true great work. And if you're communicating how that operates, how that dynamic operates, you're doing the true great work. If you're not doing that, if you haven't understood and are communicating that to others, you're actively involved in, through not doing the true great work, you are actively doing the dark great work. And that will also be highly unpopular to hear from most people. So what I'm saying is you're either part of the solution or you're part of the problem. Is that divisive? Maybe so. Is it true? It's also true. And I say unfortunately true. Believe me, I would love it to work the other way, where the people who really want to better themselves, that they're just separated from everybody else and they receive a different reality than everyone else. That would be great. I would think it would actually be much more fair. I would use the word fairness when it came to something like that. Unfortunately, that is also something that the universe doesn't really take into account. It's fair in the sense that we're receiving justice as a people in the aggregate by what we have allowed to go on here. It's the notion biblically that the sins of the father shall be visited upon the sons. We didn't make the totality of this condition. The people that came before us largely made it. But in our belief system, because we have free will to choose to think differently at any given time and place, we are perpetuating the condition, and thus we are inheriting the bad karmic consequences and the bad results. Until we decide to change our mind, then change our behavior, the condition cannot change. That is just the unfortunate reality of how reality works. And again, it's highly unpopular. To get people to even understand these dynamics is one of the hardest things you will ever do in your life, to even try to communicate these dynamics. It's not easy. That's why it's called work, folks. Once again, it's not a vacation. We're not here to be on vacation, okay? When we tag out of this realm after we've done the great work, you could take a vacation for a while, okay? But right now here, feet on the ground, we have a mission to accomplish. The mission is to break down the false religions so that we can end slavery on the earth. That's the mission of all the spiritual warriors who incarnated onto this planet, okay? We are here to end slavery. That is our mission as spiritual warriors, and we've been derailed from it by our belief in all the false religions. Some of us got involved in the cultural religions. Some of us got suckered in by the whole monetary system and became people that just, that's all they care about. Some of us said, oh no, people need quote-unquote masters. I want to get involved in the authority system called government. You know, some of us got involved in scientism and bought into this absolute nonsense, crap notion that matter is primal to everything, and there's no really such thing as spirit. Everything's just a mechanized machine and works like, you know, a robot, a wind-up doll, okay? And they went down the scientism religious path. And then other people bought into the New Age nonsense. You know, they got derailed because they believe, oh, hey, the aliens from the Andromeda galaxy, they're on their way, you know. It's just a matter of time before they descend down on the planet and, you know, they take us off world. We're going off world, don't you know, you know. Because we so deserve to be at the level of consciousness that humanity is at. We so deserve to be out there in outer space with other actual intelligent species that may be out there in the galaxy and in the universe, don't you know. Humanity is so worthy of that based upon what the earth is like right now. Not only have we destroyed our own consciousness, we've destroyed the actual, we've put a good, chink in the actual armor and life of the actual life-carrying capacity that is the Earth. You know, we've actually damaged the world that we live upon, the actual living, dynamic planet that we live upon. You know, we've gone a long way to degrading that, in addition to degrading ourselves. So, you know, to go back to what the work is, it is to get other people to abandon their religion. It's to first abandon your religions. Abandon all your false religions. Then it's to help to influence other people to abandon all their false religions. That's what the great work is to do. And these things are false religions that hold us back from the progress in consciousness and the understanding of truth. Because all the people, look, just think about this for a moment. The people who understand what I'm saying, just think about this. You'll understand it with greater clarity. Do the people who fully subscribe to any one of those religious belief systems I've mentioned, do any of them truly understand at a very deep fundamental level, truly the difference between right and wrong, and are living that knowledge in every moment of their lives? Can you make the statement that the Buddhists out there, okay, who are never active in anything, you know, they're pillow sitters, let's be honest. Okay, they're not really trying to change consciousness on the earth. Okay, if Buddhists were trying to change consciousness on the earth in a mass scale, they would be putting out the information about how consciousness has been manipulated. They would be putting out the information about how we have to reach out to others and not be passive. How many Buddhists have internet radio shows that talk about the dark occult? How many Buddhists have internet radio shows that not just deal with just principles of Buddhism and the Eightfold Path and Fourfold Path, Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path, etc., okay? How many Buddhists are talking about the actual manipulation of human consciousness that's going on this planet, okay? How many people are advocating, how many religionists are advocating for the real great work of a change in consciousness being done? No, they're telling you, believe in this. Accept this, okay? Accept this being as your savior. Accept that being as your savior. Try to just, you know, be passive. You know, don't get involved. You know, how many Buddhists are taking place in a march against the Federal Reserve System? Okay, how many Buddhists are, actively demanding that GMOs be taken out of our food? All right, how many Buddhists are, you know, advocating that people truly understand their inherent right to self-defense? So few people really understand what's really going on and are actively involved in the solution. That's why we're not making any headway. We have halfway understanding at best in some cases. You know, you see any priests talking out against the corruption in government? Catholic priests, Protestant priests, Baptist ministers? You'd see any of these priests, so-called holy men, you know, talking about how a slavery system is set up in the world? How many priests have you ever even heard say the word slavery? Say how inherently wrong it is and how we should constantly reject coercion in our at work in our lives and stop trying to coerce other people. No, they want to teach a false version of morality that has to do with preferences. Okay, with what I may or not find distasteful into my personal lifestyle. That's what they're trying to teach people as morality. Not what's actually harming somebody because it's coercive. You know, for example, consensual homosexual sex doesn't harm the two people that are involved in it, or more than two people that may be involved in it, as long as it's consensual. There's no coercion involved. I may find that distasteful because I'm heterosexual and that's not my sexual preference, but is that a moral right for people to engage in activity like that? Yes, it is. Yes, it is. I don't care who's offended by hearing somebody say that. Okay? Nobody's actively being harmed in that process. Now, if one man rapes another man, that's a homosexual act that is also immoral because coercion was involved and the taking of someone else's free will right to sexually associate with whom they choose according to their own free will, was removed from that person by violence. Violence took place. Therefore, harm took place. Therefore, it's immoral and wrong. Okay? So, you know, this notion that, well, this person is snorting cocaine. Is that morally wrong, or is that a moral right for somebody to do that? Well, I would absolutely say it's a moral right. Okay? You're putting a substance into your own body. Is that your own property? Yes, it is. You own your own body. Nobody else owns your body, so nobody can tell you what you can and can't put into it. You could say, I feel that's a wrong, a bad choice. You know, I find it distasteful. Myself, I've never snorted any cocaine in my entire life. Not one even small amount. I've never ingested anything through my nasal passages snorting it. I have an aversion to it. I think I also have an aversion to needles. I've never injected any drug into my body. Okay? You know, it's aside from, you know, since I an autoimmune form of diabetes that I have, type 1.5 or LADA diabetes, I, of course, from time to time have to take insulin injections, but I'm talking about like a street drug like heroin or something of that nature. I feel like maybe I had such a powerful experience with possibly putting myself through living hell on earth through drugs in a past life, possibly in a past incarnation, but I learned that lesson a long time ago, and I just don't engage in those activities because I necessarily find them so distasteful, but because I think that that's an unnecessary experience for me to go through, and I don't want to put myself through that because I feel that degrades consciousness, and I want my consciousness to expand and move forward. But that doesn't mean that if somebody else wants to snort a line of cocaine, that isn't their absolute right to do so. I may find it revulsive. Even the thought of, you know, heavily snorting something up into the nasal passages kind of grosses me out. I don't say you shouldn't do that. I'd say you shouldn't abuse it and, you know, burn your brain on it or, you know, really hurt your anatomy by overdoing it, as you could do with overdoing anything. But is it your right to actually engage in that behavior by ingesting a substance? Yes, it is, because it's your body. It's your property. You could put what you want in your property because you own it. It's yours. And this is what so many people blur the line with morality and don't understand. It's not about what you find distasteful or tasteful. It's not about your preferences. It's about whether harm is caused from one person to another. Are you actively causing harm to another person by drinking a glass of alcohol? Well, some people find that distasteful and it's against their religious beliefs. Well, whatever. It's against your religious beliefs. It doesn't mean it's immoral. Okay? You know, this is where religionists have gone down this, you know, path of non-understanding of natural law. You know, they think morality equates with their likes, whims, and preferences, and that's not what morality is. That's actually moral relativism. That's not really understanding the difference between right and wrong through understanding what actions are actively causing harm to other people. Okay? That's saying what I like is right and what I don't like is wrong. Well, that's the same thing dominators do. That's the same thing psychopaths do. That's the same thing people who believe that they're the owners of slaves do. My word is law. You know, that has nothing to do with morality. That has nothing to do with conscience. That has nothing to do with true religion. It has nothing to do with truth or natural law. You know? So these, I was sidetracked by going down this path of looking at where are all these religionists? We're all these new agers and actively really changing the world. No, they say be an observer, never get involved, largely. Not a blanket statement, but largely these are inactive people because they're all trapped in the left brain. And then largely people doing a lot of government-funded science, they're doing harm through putting out coercive and controlling technologies and technologies that harm the earth. You know, people involved in government are always doing harm because it's all coercion. So that's always wrongdoing, okay? People in the monetary industry, in the monetary field, through fractional reserve banking, constantly doing harm, indirectly taking people's property, okay? People in the IRS, government institutions, military, going in and confiscating the resources of other nations, other peoples, oppressing other peoples. People in the police force, just willfully following the orders of other people, thinking and idiots out there thinking that order following is some kind of a virtue. You know, What I'm trying to get at is all of these people are actively doing harm or actively being passive. If they're in the left brain religions, they're actively doing harm. If they're in the right brain religions, they're actively being passive. If they're involved in the monetary system, they're doing both.
Okay. Let me add Mark to the call. And give me just one moment, Mark, and we'll get you back up here. And something to think about. Okay, my friends, a bit of rotten fortune. Passio and I both dropped from the call and the show ended. Passio and I are not pleased with this whatsoever. He is agreeing to come back for Alchemy 2, second part. So Alchemy 2, part 2. So please join us for Occult Empire episode Alchemy 2, part 2. And I do apologize, but we did make it through the whole show, but we're finishing up here. And I do thank you for your patience, so be sure to come back. Mark has promised to come back very soon, so check out our next Occult Empire. And thank you so much for listening. Sorry about the rotten luck, but, you know, sometimes the powers that shouldn't be don't want messages to be shared. So thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Have a wonderful evening. We'll see you for Alchemy Part 2. Thank you. Good night.